Let's get started. Good afternoon, folks. My name is Vijay Tiwari. I'm a group program manager in Windows Server and System Center. I run the program management team for Virtual Machine Manager, and it truly is a privilege to represent all the engineering teams here as a part of doing the R2 work here. So before I get started, a couple of limitations that I have. I speak really fast, and I roll my R's quite a bit. But I really love Windows, Azure, Windows Server, and System Center. So let's just have some fun. And if you do feel that I'm talking fast, just raise your hand. I'll try my best to slow down. But I probably still talk fast. So, you know, let's try and see how best we can make of this. There are quite a few here. Normally, I do like to take questions during the session. But I think with so many of us here, let's just hold the questions till the end. But if there is something that you really must get answered right then, you know, feel free to ask the question, and I'll answer it. I also want to point out that there are a few people here from our team here as well. We got Eamon, we got Vaibhava and Chung here as well. Could you please stand up? You know, they're part of the System Center team as well, and so they'll be here as well. And I believe we have another person here who's going to join System Center pretty shortly as well. So I don't know who that person is, but somebody here is going to join System Center pretty soon from Europe. All right, so what is the objective of this session? I'm going to give you a talk about what have we done in System Center 2012 R2, and I'll demonstrate the cloud OS scenarios that Jeffrey Snover and Jeff Woolsey articulated this morning in the session. And I think Brad Anderson spoke about the cloud OS in the keynote as well, followed by Jeffrey Snover and Jeff Woolsey. And so we'll talk about how we actually realize all those scenarios end to end. All right. So before I actually delve into 2012 R2, it's important to understand what we did in System Center 2012, because that is what laid the foundation for the private cloud. And everything that we have done since with SP1 and thereafter with R2 actually built on the capabilities that we have provided in System Center 2012. How many of you are already users of System Center? And how many of you are already using System Center 2012? Should I skip the slide then? All right, I think I'll talk to us. There are quite a few of you who haven't had a chance to talk, sort of use this, so I'll talk through that a little bit. So first and foremost, it's important to understand that when we talk about systems management, we look at it from the perspective of who is the person who's actually going to do the job, right? And we break up the world into two distinct pieces. There are a set of people among you who actually are a provider, who basically take raw infrastructure and create some capacity out of it so somebody can actually do something useful with that capacity. Now, that persona who's actually creating the, managing the capacity is called a service provider or a service admin or an infrastructure admin. And then the person who's actually consuming that capacity is called the application owner. And so what we try, whenever we talk about System Center capabilities or management capabilities, we try and characterize which person is going to find this tool to be most useful. Now, it's not always easy to draw the line very distinctly, but we try and do this because as and when we do our research, when we talk to customers, that is how we actually gather the input and design our software so we can provide the right set of tools and the right set of solutions to the right set of customers. So with this in mind, you know, the application owner is in the mode of actually deploying and managing applications. And in today's cloud-based environment, the gold standard for deploying applications is through a self-service portal, right? That is how IT disengages itself from having to do the mundane tasks and actually has the ability to offload this to the users themselves. Now, this self-service portal actually uses a service model which encapsulates how the application needs to be deployed. And the service model builds upon a set of automation tools which can consume the service model and realize the application and its details, artifacts, onto the underlying infrastructure. And to manage the infrastructure, you have a bunch of tools which allow you to deploy, configure, migrate, inventory your assets, monitor it, and also protect it. Now, this is the general realm in which we live in. What I'll overlay on top of this is where each of the system center components plays a role. So from a self-service portal perspective, we have System Center App Controller, and we have System Center Service Manager. They both provide portals for different purposes. And later on in this talk, I'll talk about guidelines of what portal to use where. And then in an attempt to make sure that we are consistent with Windows Azure, we also released a self-service portal based on HTML5 called Windows Azure Pack. So we've got three distinct portals, each of them serving a distinct purpose. And I'll talk about what to use where. In terms of process automation, we have two major components to talk of. We have System Center Orchestrator, and we have System Center Service Manager. Now, with System Center Orchestrator, we also bundle an API layer called Service Provider Foundation, which takes System Center as it exists and layers a REST OData interface on top of it, so customers can either build their own portals or can use the existing portals that we provide. So, for example, the Windows Azure Pack portal utilizes the REST OData interfaces provided by Service Provider Foundation. Now let's come to the tools that help you do these six things. They range from Virtual Machine Manager, which manages all your physical and virtual infrastructure. You have Configuration Manager, which is still used very widely in server deployments and application deployments. You have Operations Manager, which is the most widely used monitoring product today. And then you have Data Protection Manager, which allows you to back up both your physical and virtual workloads. Now, the beauty of this is that we as Microsoft have the opportunity to provide this kind of consistent management across three distinct types of clouds. We can provide it to you in your private cloud, if you want to run it inside your own data center. We can provide it to a service provider who utilizes the Microsoft stack to build their environment. And we provide it even in Windows Azure. And I think we've spoken of this over and over again, that we have this unique opportunity to provide you consistent management across these three different types of clouds. All right. So just to give you a little bit of historical perspective of where we came, in April of 2012, we released System Center 2012, which were a whole bunch of that was the first time that System Center released as a single product. So there was no opportunity for you to buy anything separately. All the components were aggregated, and we were sold them as one single product. And they operated against Windows Server 2008 R2. Then in September of last year, we actually made Windows Server 2012 available with a ton of innovation that we brought to you as a part of that OS release. And to support that OS release, we actually did a release of System Center called System Center 2012 SP1, which was made generally available in January of this year to support all the capabilities that came in Windows Server 2012. And thereafter, we snapped the timelines of Windows Server and System Center together, and we are actually announcing the availability of the preview release of Windows Server 2012 R2 and System Center 2012 R2 and Windows Azure Pack today. In fact, there were two important announcements that were made today. One was an announcement that Oracle and Microsoft have reached a partnership, and Oracle is going to support Oracle databases on Hyper-V. I know a lot of you actually use Oracle as a database, and it's a great partnership that we have with Oracle. They're actually going to support the database running on Hyper-V. The second big announcement, and I'm hoping that some of you have already downloaded the bits and are running them, is that the System Center 2012 R2 and Windows Server 2012 R2 bits are actually available for you to download right now. So if there's one message I want you to take away from this slide, is that moving forward, Windows Server and System Center are going to be on the same timeline. So in the past, we've had this, this challenge where we would release Windows Server, and then we would come out a few months later, or sometimes quite a time later, and release System Center a few months after Windows Server. And that makes it really challenging for enterprise and service provider customers who need comprehensive and end-to-end management solutions. So we worked over the last few years to make sure that we actually have an aligned timeline. And moving forward, Windows Server and System Center, starting with the R2 release, are going to be on the same timeline. All right. Let's talk about the three data centers that we talk of in the context of the cloud operating system. Now, the cloud operating system is not a product that we actually sell. It's a philosophy of doing work, and it's a brand that we want to accomplish around the three different types of customers that we serve. One is, you know, the enterprise and small and medium customers who deploy System Center and Windows Server on their premises. Then we have a whole bunch of partners or service providers who are taking Windows Server and System Center and Windows Azure Pack and offering services on that platform to their customers. We call that the service provider cloud. And then the third is Windows Azure ourselves. And the cloud OS is a philosophy that binds all these three clouds together. I don't know if you missed this morning, but Windows Server 2012 Hyper-V, the version that we ship to US customers, is exactly the same version that powers Windows Azure. I mean, that's the level of confidence that we want to have when we ship software to you. All right? Let's talk a little bit about what actually constitutes a cloud. The cloud is, for better or for worse, has been an overhyped term over the last couple of years. And a lot of people conflate virtualization with cloud. And in reality, the two are actually very different. Virtualization definitely forms a distinct and unique fundamental basis of the cloud, but it is not the only way you can build a cloud. Right? So in terms of the underlying fabric of the cloud, you take a bunch of physical servers, you take your compute, and you take some storage, and you aggregate them and pool them into an SLA-based construct, right? So if you have the best class of your network and the best class of your storage, you pool them together and maybe call it gold cloud, and the others silver and bronze and so on and so forth. And thereafter, layered on top of that, you create a pooled abstraction of this SLA. In System Center, we call it the cloud. If you go to the VMM console, it is actually called the cloud. Now, a number of times I see that, you know, people will name the cloud after the name of the entity that is using the cloud. They call it the marketing cloud and the finance cloud. And we ourselves in Microsoft have been guilty of actually perpetrating that crime. It is actually not the right way to do it. The right way to actually project the cloud is to project it in the context of a service level agreement. So you put your best class of storage, networking, and compute and put them as the gold cloud. Other as silver and the third as bronze, and so on and so forth. And then use the user role construct to delegate capacity to consumers of that cloud. So you may have a marketing department and a finance department who need both access to the gold cloud, so you grant them limited access in terms of quota, what they can consume on that gold cloud. But don't go call the cloud gold. That is the whole notion of multi-tenancy, where you take shared infrastructure and have multiple tenants who can live on that shared infrastructure in a completely isolated manner. So now that you've got this capacity and you've delegated access to the capacity, you want to make sure that somebody can actually deploy applications on that capacity. And we do that using a standardized set of services, which are called service templates, which allow you to model your application and then deploy it in a repeatable and error-free manner. And on top of this, you actually layer an API layer and then build portals on top of this API abstraction, the self-service portals. All right. So in terms of introducing R2, we broke down the investments in R2 into five different buckets. The first and foremost is how do we allow you to provision an infrastructure in the most optimal manner? The second, how do we allow you to operate that infrastructure in the most optimal manner once you've deployed it? The initial step of deploying infrastructure is just the first step. You know, we call it the day one cost and the day 100 cost. And a lot of people emphasize on the day one cost, but it is important to realize that the day 100 cost actually costs you much more over time. And so we are trying to invest to make sure that you can efficiently operate your infrastructure in the most optimal manner by the investments that we have made in data production manager and operations manager and so on and so forth. Now that you've got this infrastructure, you layer on top of it an API layer and a bunch of self-service portals so that your consumers can consume and that capacity that you've created in a self-service and automated manner. So we'll talk about the investments that we made there. And in the middle of all of this, you need an IT process management system So you can have governance, regulation, and control over the capabilities that you provide to your customers. That we cover under IT service management. And lastly, at the end of the day, you're creating all this infrastructure to deploy applications on top of it. And so we will talk about the investments that we have made for making your application management better with this R2 release. So what we'll do in the next few hour or so is to go through all of this in each of these buckets. All right, so in terms of infrastructure provisioning, you know, IT has basically asked us to say that, look, I want you to reduce the complexity that you have in my environment, give me the most efficient way to manage my infrastructure, and make sure that customers have an elastic infrastructure which can respond to the demanding needs or the changing needs of the above applications. And so in order to meet those needs, what we have done is that in the underlying fabric, we made a whole bunch of announcements, ranging from the ability for you to create a shared cluster without using iSCSI or fiber channel. You can create a shared virtual machine cluster just using a VHDX file. Just place the VHDX file on a file server, and you can actually create a guest cluster without having to use any other kind of storage access technology to that storage. We allow you to resize the VHDX disk so that you can dynamically resize the disks that you have inside your VM. We've added robust support for Linux by actually adding dynamic memory support for Linux. And lastly, we enable you to actually now use synthetic fiber channel as a means of accessing storage from inside the virtual machine. In terms of being able to reduce the infrastructure complexity, we actually now provision file-based storage right from inside VMM. So you can deploy your file-based storage for your virtualization infrastructure right from inside VMM. And in addition, we also allow you to back up Linux VMs in the most optimal manner. For those of you who've actually tried backing up Linux prior to this release, whenever you backed up Linux, it would actually take a pause of the virtual machine while the workload is running. And we actually worked with the Linux community to enhance that capability, so now that no longer happens. And I'll show you a little bit of demo of that as well. And in terms of making sure that you have multi-tenanted cloud infrastructure, we are working with the industry to actually enable you to manage all the devices that you have inside a data center, regardless of whether it is storage, which we manage through SMIS, or it is top-of-rack switches, which we manage through a layer called the data center abstraction layer, which allows us to go poke at those network switches and give you insight into what's going on in those environments. All right, so let's get into a demo, and I'll show you a little bit of a demo of what we do in the context of compute, networking, and storage. Doesn't seem to be switching. Yeah. Oh, that's okay. Thank you. All right. All right. So let's look at the in terms of managing the fabric, VMM is how you manage both your compute, networking, and storage. So let's talk about a little bit of the innovation that we've done in the context of compute. So in the context of compute, if you look here, this is a new node that we've added in VMM. It says physical computer profile. So previously, in VMM, you could only deploy hosts, which would act as Hyper-V hosts. But now, that is no longer the case. If you actually go create a physical computer profile, you'll actually notice that you can actually target that host to become a virtual machine host, or you can make it a Windows file server as well. Right? And you can only imagine that over time, we will expand these capabilities to be able to deploy any kind of role, either in a physical machine or in a virtual machine. But in this release, we allow you to do it as a file server or as a VM host. Okay? Let's talk a little bit about what we have done in the context of storage. Let's go to this demo here. And let me show you this file server profile. This is a profile that I created by selecting the file server profile. I can configure the hardware configuration. I can configure the operating system configuration. And this profile, when applied to a physical machine, will make that physical machine act like a Windows file server, which can act like your storage subsystem for hosting your VMs and VHDs. I'm sorry, hosting your VHDs and VM configurations for live VMs. Okay? The next thing I want to talk to you in the context of storage is the capabilities that we have done for you to create guest clusters without having to use any block-based protocol. Now, if you're creating a cluster, you need access to shared storage. In order to access shared storage, there are a variety of ways to do it. One is you use iSCSI from the guest, or you use something like Fibre Channel from inside the guest. But now what you can do is you take two guests, point them to the same file server, and then just place a VHDX file there. And then that VHDX file can act like the shared storage across the multiple instances that spin up as a guest cluster. Right? So let me just show you the properties of this template. And I want you to watch just one capability here. If you look at this storage under the SCSI adapter, if you look here, you will see that this disk, so this is a service template which allows you to deploy a SQL guest cluster. But the guest cluster, in terms of using storage, it will just use a shared VHDX file, which will act like the backend storage for that guest cluster. Now, not only are we making this capability of creating clusters using shared VHDX available, we are also going to give you this SQL template, so you can stamp out multiple guest clusters using SQL as well. So over the past few years, we've released a lot of platform capabilities which allow you to model your applications, but we have not made a lot of advent in giving you actually these out-of-box capabilities. And with this release, we're actually doing that by giving you the template which allows you to deploy that SQL guest cluster. Okay? So I've talked about compute. I've talked about storage. Let's talk about networking. The first thing I want to show you in the context of networking is what we have done to give you the ability to deploy a gateway server which acts like the gateway for network virtualization. Now, in the 2012 release, you needed to actually use third parties to deploy a network virtualization gateway. In Windows Server 2012 R2, we're actually shipping an out-of-the-box template which will allow you to deploy a Windows Server 2012 R2 VM and host and act like a network virtualization gateway. So we are shipping the capabilities as part of the Windows Server box, and we are shipping the template in VMM that will allow you to deploy that gateway automated right outside the box. Now, in the preview release, this gateway is not highly available, but when we actually RTM the bits, it will be a highly available gateway as well, guest clustered and host clustered. Let me show you another capability in the context of networking that we've added in this release, which is really interesting. So a lot of times, when you end up inside the data center, you have this constant dialogue with your networking team, where the networking team says, well, I have configured the network switch correctly, and I can assure you that VLAN 25 is being piped to the Hyper-V host. And the Hyper-V administrator is saying, I can't see VLAN coming in there. Just like you did with storage, with SMIS, we are now enabling you to actually go look at what's going on from a networking perspective using an abstraction called OMI, right? And here, if you actually go and see, this is a NIC, which is actually connected to an Arista switch. And here, I'm actually getting a warning, which is telling me that the way that I expect the network to be configured on the Hyper-V side is not the way the switch has been configured. Right? So right out of the box, you can figure out if your network is being configured as to how you, as virtualization administrators, expect your network to be. And if you don't, and if it is not according to that, you can actually go into a mode of remediation right from in here. and we will go talk to the networking switch and configure it appropriately. Now, I understand that this may not be always possible in all environments because the networking team would like to exercise certain control, but at least in those environments where you can actually have the dialogue with the networking team, they may open it up to you. If not, at least you have enough insight to be able to tell them about what errors you are running into and give them insight so they can actually go fix the problem. Okay? So these are the capabilities that we have invested in this release in the context of managing a fabric. So compute, networking, and storage. All right. Now that you actually have a reliable compute, network, and storage, how do you make sure that the VMs that you deployed in the infrastructure actually have an ability to fail over from one site to the other? Now, there are many sessions on this technology in this conference, so I'm not going to go into too much of detail, but we announced the availability of preview of a capability called Windows Azure Hyper-V Recovery Manager, which is actually a service that's running in the cloud, and it allows you the opportunity for you to pair two of your data centers together so you can then orchestrate the failure of VMs from one data center to the other. Okay? And by virtue of having built this as a SaaS application, other than deploying VMM, you have to deploy no additional technology. And this SaaS application just binds into your VMM environment, and then using VMM, it can allow you to fail over your VMs from a primary site to a secondary site, as well as provide recovery plans inside your web-based portal. So you can define which VM starts up in which order. Okay? Now, I'm not going to give you the demo. There are multiple sessions here that will talk about the demo. I'll move on. So let's talk about the investments that we have made in the infrastructure monitoring capabilities. Our customers have a very diverse set of environments. And so we have invested in making sure that Operations Manager allows you to monitor infrastructure regardless of whether it is switches, storage, different types of operating systems, and so on and so forth. In terms of what we do, we have invested a lot in terms of the dashboarding capabilities of Operations Manager in this release. So you as Fabric administrators get a rich dashboarding of capabilities which project the same objects that you see inside VMM. So you can look inside OM and look at the health of all these objects. And I'll show a little bit of demo here. And the last thing, we actually have a SaaS-based application called System Center Advisor, which can sit in the cloud, and once you give it permission, it can look at your environment and give you best practices on how to administer your environment. And those best practices are those learnings that we have had from running these very, very large data centers with these environments. So SQL, Hyper-V, and we provide all the best practice learning through System Center Advisor to you. And not only that, we actually have integrated System Center Advisor into Operations Manager, so the alerts from Advisor can show up right inside your Operations Manager console. Now let's show you a little bit of a demo of what we can do in terms of monitoring using Operations Manager and what we have done in the context of backup. So here I'm looking at a System Center 2012 R2 OM console. And this is a new MP that we are shipping, or an enhanced MP that we are shipping. And here you can see that there are whole assets that exist inside VMM show up right inside OM here. And you can actually go look at the Fabric Health dashboard. And this dashboard gives you more details of all the elements that constitute a cloud. It will talk about the host state. It will talk about your storage pools. It will talk about your file share. It will also talk about your network node state. And by capability that we shipped in System Center 2012 that we have enhanced in R2, you can actually get a lot more details by digging into what's going on from a networking perspective. So here, I'm showing you an environment which shows you how the switches inside your data center are connected. And you can actually pivot to showing you how the machines inside your data center are connected to this networking environment, and which allows you to debug how which of these links have actually failed, thereby allowing you to at least have a conversation with your networking administrators. Okay? All right. The next demo I want to show you is how you can back up Linux without actually having to take a pause inside the Linux virtual machine. So here, I've got a Linux VM. I'm going to start pinging Hotmail from this Linux VM. Right? So there it off it goes. This is a DPM console. And this DPM console is set up to make sure that it can back up this Linux VM. And now I can actually just create a recovery point of this Linux virtual machine. And while this is happening, you will notice that this virtual machine has no pause. For those customers who actually had the opportunity to ever back up Linux, this was one of the most challenging conversations that they had with the Linux administrators as to why, when backing up a Linux VM on Hyper-V, it required the VM to be paused. So this allows you to not take any downtime regardless of the workload, whether it's Windows or whether it's Linux. Okay. Now that you've got an underlying fabric that has been deployed, what do you do with it? I talked about the fact that you need to have a self-service portal. So how do you build that self-service portal? Well, before you do that, the first and foremost thing you need to recognize is that there are many companies who may not suffice by just having a single stamp. A stamp being a resource capability which can be managed by a single instance of System Center. That is one VMM server and one OM server. There may be assets which lie in different data centers, and therefore you require to have multiple instances of VMM. Or even if they are in the same data center, they may exceed the bounds that a single VMM server can manage. And this is the exact same thing that we do in Azure as well. In Azure, a single stamp is about 880 physical machines, right? And then they have multiple stamps whose capacity is aggregated at an aggregation layer. And that's exactly what we have done with Service Provider Foundation for you. So you can have multiple stamps, each of you providing capacity, and on top of that, you can layer something like Service Provider Foundation, which can aggregate the capacity across those multiple stamps and then make it available as a REST API. It would help if I actually show you the slide. I apologize. So going back, so we have stamps, and layered on top of the stamps is Service Provider Foundation. And on top of Service Provider Foundation, which offers the REST OData interface, it actually provides you portals. And in the context of the portal, there are two different personas that actually access that portal. One is a service administrator who actually creates plans so a customer can utilize them. And the other is the consumer of those plans. And I'll talk a little later about what those plans are. But here, I want you to focus on the fact that there are stamps. Layered on top of stamps is an API abstraction called Service Provider Foundation, which aggregates the capacity from these multiple stamps. All right? So in terms of self-service, there are three facets. They want the app owners to be able to, you know, deploy their VMs and applications without having to be in the critical path of them deploying it. You want a common set of management tools both for on-premise and for anything that's lying off-premise. And you need to be able to expand the capacity based on the changing needs of the application. So what we have done is we provide you a consistent set of service templates which allow you to deploy these applications in these environments. We ship them as a part of SP1, and we've enhanced them now with this release. What we are now trying to do is to actually give you artifacts which are exactly consistent with Windows Azure. So if you looked at the service template model that VMM shipped as a part of SP1, that model could not be taken as such and deployed into Windows Azure. They had different models. But we are on a journey to make sure that the models are exactly consistent between on-prem software and Windows Azure. And in this release, for the first time, we are shipping a capability called Virtual Machine Role, which can be taken and it models a multi-instance single-tier application, and it can be deployed onto Windows Azure, and it can be deployed into the System Center environment, and the models are exactly consistent. And over time, we'll make this to be a multi-tier model as well. And the last thing is that when customers are working in this environment, they want to make sure they have automation. What we have realized after running these large properties like Bing and Hotmail and many, many others, Windows Azure included, is that the human is the most error-prone element in the loop. And so to make sure that you don't run into errors, we are constantly requesting you to actually automate as many tasks as you can. And to enable that, we are actually shipping a new capability as a part of System Center 2012 R2 called Service Management Automation, which is a PowerShell workflow-based automation engine that we are shipping for the first time as a part of the R2 release. Now, from a philosophy standpoint, I talked about we've got Cloud OS, which provides you consistent APIs and models between three of our clouds, service provider, Windows, Azure, and on-premise. And in order to make that real, there are multiple things that we need to do. The first and foremost is that we want to make sure that the user experience that you get when you log on to your cloud, whether it's a service provider cloud, your on-premise cloud, or whether it's Windows Azure, it is exactly consistent. So there is no new learning that your customers have to go through when they have to deploy a VM. It's exactly the same across all these environments. The second thing we have to make sure is that as these environments are built, the artifacts like templates and others are exactly reusable across these different types of clouds. And in order to make that real, I talked about the virtual machine role capability that we are shipping for the first time as a part of 2012 R2, which is going to be consistent with Windows Azure when it ships later this year or early next calendar year. In order to provide the consistent user experience, we shipped a capability in SP1. At that point of time, it was called Windows Azure Services for Windows Server. It has now been more, it's got a more pithy name called Windows Azure Pack. And maybe by the time we ship the next time, it'll be called something even less, but we can only hope. So right now it's called Windows Azure Pack. And what this does is it provides you a consistent user experience between what you get in Windows Azure and what you get with your on-prem software. And what we are trying to do is to take the services that customers get when they run inside Azure and make that available for you as on-prem customers as well. So today when customers go to Windows Azure, they can spin up a virtual machine, they can spin up a website, and they can spin up a service bus which acts like a brokering communication between two endpoints. These three capabilities are shipping as a part of on-prem capabilities that we ship to you as a part of 2012 R2. Now, admittedly, the underlying engines that realize this capability inside a data center may not be exactly the same as runs in Windows Azure. But from an API perspective, from a functionality perspective, from a capability perspective, and from a user experience perspective, you as customers will see no difference between all of these. Okay? So I talked about the fact that we've got three different portals. I talked about System Center App Controller, I talked about Service Manager, and I talked about the Windows Azure Pack. And on this slide, I have basically tried to articulate which portal to use where. Now, if you're a customer who's heavily invested in VMM service templates, and you're not actually using Azure, then the right portal for you to use is System Center App Controller, which has been updated within the R2 release. It's a Silverlight-based portal, so it's not the most, it won't run on any device. It requires the Silverlight runtime to be available on the machine that you run it as. Then you have the Service Manager portal, which is really focused on providing you IT process management. So if you want to put a workflow in place which allows you to say that, look, before I deploy this virtual machine, I want an IT pro to be in the loop and approve it, then the right kind of portal for you to use is Service Manager. And Service Manager has built-in integration through Orchestrator with VMM and Operations Manager. And the latest portal that we are shipping is Windows Azure Pack, which is consistent with Windows Azure. It's an HTML5-based based portal, and it really focuses on three capabilities right now: virtual machines, websites, and service bus. Right? Now, over time, it is reasonable to expect that we will converge these portals, but for the time being, each of them actually serve a different purpose. Right? And over time, I think it's reasonable to expect that we are going to take all the capabilities that we have in the Silverlight and, you know, the SharePoint-based portal, which is Service Manager, we are going to consolidate them onto an HTML5-based portal in the future. All right. So this is a picture that I showed previously, and I talked about two different kinds of functionality that you need to be able to do as a part of this portal. You need to be able to log in as a tenant and create virtual machines, create networks, and you need to be able to do service administration. So let's look at what you can do as a part when you log in as a tenant. Okay? So let's show you a demo of Windows Azure Pack. All right. So I'm going to log in here. So this is the Windows Azure Pack, which is available to you as System Center customers. It's actually available free of download, as a free download, right? You'll notice that up here, it has been branded with the company called Fabricam. Now, just to show you what I mean by consistency from a user experience perspective, I've also logged in here to the Windows Azure portal. This is the Windows Azure portal. And you'll see that from a user experience perspective, it's actually the same user experience framework that we have taken from Windows Azure and shipping it to you as on-prem customers. Now, obviously, you'll see that the set of services that Windows Azure offers is far larger, and over time, we're going to take all those services and make them available to you as on-prem customers as well. So let's see what you can do here from a service management perspective. Here, as a customer, I've got two VMs running. One happens to be a Linux VM, another happens to be a Windows VM. Let's drill into them to see what they have to offer. All right, so I've drilled in here, and you'll notice something really interesting here with this VM. You know, I've got an interesting dashboard which gives you all the health characteristics, all the utilization, and so on and so forth. Now, when this finishes, I want you to focus on what it says for IP addresses. And when it actually comes back, it will show you that this machine actually does not have an IP address. A number of times what happens is that customers will go deploy the VM and then get into the VM and somehow mess up their networking. And now they have no way to get back into the VM to actually go set it right. And this is one of the largest support calls that IT gets. So what we have done now is for you as IT pros can actually enable the ability for your customers to get a console access to this virtual machine without having direct network access of the VM. And the way this works is that we download a little bit of an RDP file and we go through the Hyper-V host and actually give you console access to the VM. Right? So this is a Linux VM. I have full access to it. I can actually operate with it, get inside, go fix any issues that I may have created as a part of, you know, trying to set up the network or so on and so forth. So this is another great capability that we're giving to you as a part of the R2 release. All right. So with this demo, let's move on. All right. So I talked about IT service management, right? Now, what happens, one of the key fundamental tenets of the cloud, so for example, if you go to Windows Azure or go to Amazon Web Services, what is one of the key tenets of a cloud? Obviously, it needs to be self-service, but there's another key tenet of the cloud which says that I should only pay for what I use. That's a fundamental tenet of the cloud. It kind of mimics what you do with the electric company. When you consume electricity, you only are charged for what you consume from the electric grid. The cloud is operating in the same model for compute. So when you create virtual machines, you should only be charged for the capacity that you actually use inside that cloud. And to enable that elastic cloud models, we have provided you capabilities so that you can take the usage data and metrics and actually create reports, and so you can actually do chargeback or showback in your environments. Now, this is another new capability that we are shipping as a part of this release. I talked about service management administration and this new capability, which is called usage analytics. This is a new capability. It is bundled as a part of System Center Orchestrator and is made available as a part of this release. Let's take a quick look at what this capability does for us. So here, this is a rich SharePoint-based dashboard that you get as a part out of the box that we ship. So here you are getting, you know, what is the runtime, run rate of each of these virtual machines. And you can do really interesting thing, like you can drill down into this and say, look, I want to actually drill down into this and look at it from the perspective of the user role to see how much, which of the user roles operated across this infrastructure. And this updates, and you actually get a pretty rich capability right out of the bat as a report. But this is not all. These are out-of-the-box reports, but a lot of you... Yes, there was a question. Yes. I'm sorry? I'm sorry, I can't hear the question. The question is this for Azure? No, this is for... This is for the VMs and capabilities that we ship to you as a part of on-prem software. So this needs the data warehouse and analytics, which needs to be hooked into VMM, which is where it actually pulls the data out of. I'm sorry, I can't hear you. Is there a mic? You can... Yes, the question was, do I need to integrate the with VMM to get the System Center dashboard? Yes. No, you only need the data warehouse analytics, which is a new capability, and you need integration with VMM, but you need Windows Azure Pack. Windows Azure Pack is not Windows Azure. It is Windows Azure capabilities that we bring to you on-prem. No, Windows Azure Pack has got nothing to do with Orchestrator. It is a portal and an API layer that sits over multiple different kinds of resource providers, which gives you the similar kind of capabilities that Windows Azure gives. All right? Thank you. All right. But this is not all. So there are many people who actually need richer capabilities for you to be able to slice and dice the data in any way you want it. And so what we allow you to do is to actually create pivot tables. Namaguru actually do create one here. You can take all the data that's available, and you can create rich pivot tables and slice and dice the data in any way you want. So you have all the flexibility in your hands to be able to create any kinds of reports and charge by any kind of metric that you as a customer want to charge, you as a service provider want to charge your customers for. All right. All right. Now, the next thing I want to talk about is hybrid networking. So I talked about, you've got a service provider, you've got on-prem. Now, let's say you as a customer go and acquire some capacity from a service provider. Let's say it's virtual machines. And let's say that virtual machine needs to join a domain controller or a domain, the domain controller of which is running inside your data center. So how do we make sure that that virtual machine that's running in the service provider or Windows Azure can connect back into your data center? That is where hybrid networking comes into the picture. And this is capability that we are shipping as a part of this release, where we are shipping a gateway which acts as an edge device on the service provider. It's a multi-tenanted gateway which allows you to pipe Hyper-V network virtualization traffic out from the gateway into your data center. And we automatically take care of routing and automatically updating the routes if and when new subnets are added on either side. And we do that by supporting BGP. There are two detailed sessions on networking which can talk about this, but I'll briefly show you a demo of how you, as a customer of a service provider, can actually create your own network. Now, just to let you know, this is not a capability that's available only to service providers. I've come across many, many customers, enterprise customers, who need to be able to spin up their own networks without having to go create VLANs in isolation mode and talk to the networking teams. I spoke to a customer who spins up 300 networks a month because they have developers who need access to a SharePoint farm with a SQL database and a domain controller, and they need to put them on a completely isolated fenced network. Now, in a dynamically changing environment, if you're going to use VLANs, that makes it highly, highly rigid, and it's very difficult to actually achieve this kind of agility. For that kind of a scenario, is really well suited and served by something like Hyper-V network virtualization, where you can give your customers something like this, and these customers can then actually go and create their own networks. Let me show you a demo of how you can actually do that. All right, so let's go into this portal. And I actually go and create a network. Okay, so I'm going to create a virtual network. I'm going to go through a concept of custom create, right? I'm going to give it a name. Let's say it's a TechEd demo network. I can create a V4 or a V6 network. And then I need to give it the IP address of the DNS server that is going to provide name resolution for this network. And here is where I can configure whether this network actually connects back into my data center or not. In this case, I'm not going to go through the process of connecting it back to my data center. I'm just allowing my developer to create a network which they can actually connect their virtual machines to me, and that network will be completely isolated. So I'll leave both these checkboxes off. And I'll leave the address space out. You can actually create smaller networks or larger networks. And that's it. Now, just with a few clicks of the button, effectively what your consumer has done is they've been able to create their network on the fly. None of your physical network needs to change to make this happen. It is as trivial as this. It is entirely realized in software with a combination of Windows Server and System Center. That's all that you need to actually create this isolated networks. And now that once this network gets created, your customers can actually then create VMs and connect this to the network. And any VM that shows up on this network will be able to talk to other VMs on that network. Now, you can set up more complicated topologies, but I'm just giving you an example, which is a very common dev test scenario that we've seen over and over again. All right. All right, so I talked about that. So now let's talk a little bit about what you can do as a service administrator, right? So remember the Windows Azure portal or the Windows Azure Pack portal that I showed you? A customer can create virtual machines, a customer can create websites, and a customer can create a service bus. But there is somebody who's sitting behind the scenes who decided that you as a customer were granted the ability to create virtual machines, service bus connection endpoints, and websites. Because for somebody, I could say, no, this person only has the ability to create virtual machines and nothing else. So that person who actually does this kind of a work is called the service administrator. So now I'm going to take you into the service administrator's portal and show you a couple of things that we are doing there as a part of the changes that we are adding there. So like I said, they can decide what infrastructure gets access, is granted to which particular kind of a subscriber. Okay? So let's actually go through a quick demo to show you what this looks like. Now, I'm going to go through a different tab, which is actually the service administrator tab. So I'm logged in with a different persona. And now, let's go look at these plans. I have a good, dashboard about the plans. Let's open up this plan. Right? And this plan tells you, right, what are the various kinds of services that are available to people who subscribe to this plan. This plan happens to have only SQL servers and MySQL servers available to their customers. But there may be other plans where you want to add virtual machines and websites as well. And so you can create this package offering. I sort of liken it to what is called as your cell phone plan. When you buy your cell phone plan, as a part of the cell phone plan, you get, some number of speaking minutes, some amount of a text plan, and some amount of a data plan. The fact that you can club these three things together and make a single unit that you sell to your customers is what we call as a plan. And this is where you actually go and administer the fine-grained control over what goes into what plan. Make sense? All right. So I'll get out of this demo. And let me go talk of service administrators. I talked about how automation is key inside your data center. And I talk about a new capability which is called Windows PowerShell-based workflow that we have made available as a part of this new release. This is new functionality that is shipping in addition to Orchestrator. Orchestrator absolutely continues to exist. We're going to update all the integration packs as a part of System Center Orchestrator in this release. But in this release, we are adding a new automation capabilities, which allows you to do automation using PowerShell. And there's a fundamental reason for this. And the reason is that in Microsoft, we have an engineering criteria called Common Engineering Criteria, which requires every Microsoft product to release PowerShell-based automation for their product. So what's happened is that over the last couple of years, every single Microsoft product has accumulated a wealth of PowerShell commandlets that they've shipped. Now that we are shipping this kind of an automation capability, you can take all those rich PowerShell commandlets that come out from all the products, Windows Server, System Center, Exchange, and using this automation capability, you can create rich automation and workflows right out of the box. So I'm going to now show you a brief demo of what you can do as a part of service management automation. So I'm going to go back into the Service Administrator's portal, and I'm going to go to this automation tab. This is a tab that's new, right? Now, this is a rich dashboard which is showing you what is the status of the various jobs that have been accomplished in the last 7 days. 4 of them completed, some of them are still running, suspended, stopped, failed, so on and so forth, right? So PowerShell workflow exists inside Windows Server. What this provides you is comprehensive management so that you can actually go back and look at history about all the jobs that failed. You can restart jobs which are stored in a database and so on and so forth. So it provides you robust automation and management around the PowerShell workflows which you can build inside Windows Server. Now let's go take a look at a runbook. And because I happen to be a VMM person, I'm going to pick on a VMM runbook that you can actually audit, create one. So this is a very simple runbook, which basically shows you how to get the list of VMs from a VMM server, right? And this authoring console is built right into Windows Azure Pack. There's no extra thing that you need to download, right? And this is a simple workflow, a simple PowerShell workflow that allows you to do this. You have the ability to actually run this right from inside here. Or you can actually schedule how to actually run these in a particular manner. This is a very simple runbook. But there may be other runbooks which you want to run in a scheduled manner and collect the input in an automated manner, you know, like twice a day or so on and so forth. And this allows you, for example, to actually create schedules where you can decide, you know, how often I want to run it. I want to run it daily, and how, you know, at what time, and so on and so forth. And all this is available to you as a part of this service management automation capability. Lastly, you know, you have a lot of these jobs that are running, right? Some of these workflows are long running. And so you want the ability to actually have a historical backlog of what time the job was started, who started the job, when did it finish, what were the success parameters, and so on and so forth. Now, those things are all captured as a part of this job history. And you can get all those details. Like, for example, this is showing you when this particular runbook was run, you know, what were the various parameters that were passed as this runbook was run. Now, this is all the richness that you get as a part of service management automation over and above the base, you know, capabilities that you get in box as a part of PowerShell automation. Okay. Let's move on. All right. So I want to talk a little bit about application performance monitoring. Right? Now, customers, you know, as a part of 2012 SP1, we actually shipped rich .NET application monitoring, which allowed you to monitor your application performance right from the point that the transaction left the hands of your consumer who was hitting a website all the way down to the last database transaction. We allowed you to go deep inside and check this particular SQL procedure call is actually taking more than, you know, normal. And we had all that insight. What we are doing as a part of the R2 release is we are bringing all that rich insight and capability for you, for those of the customers who are actually using Java. So all that you could do with .NET application performance monitoring in previous releases, you can now do with Java applications. So let me give you a quick demo of application performance management. So first and foremost, let's start in this view where I've got a DinnerNow application. Now, this one happens to be a .NET application, right? But I'll give you an example where, you know, the availability. This availability, it's a web-based application, and we have got multiple points of presence in the world which are actually hitting this website and telling you whether this website is available and accessible from multiple different points of presence in the world. So you've got this rich dashboard. Oops. You've got this rich dashboard which shows you all the key metrics that you as a customer are interested in. Now you can drill in more deeper into a summary dashboard where here it is showing you a whole bunch of alerts. And you can dig in deeper into one of these transactions one of these alerts, right? And if I click here, you'll actually see the detailed time that this entire transaction took at different points in its entire life cycle. And you can drill down and say, you can have a meaningful dialogue with your developer and tell him that, look, this application is performing purely, and I can tell you that the WCF call for the web UX menu search service is taking 4.8 seconds. And that's why this delay is happening. Could you go fix it? Right? So all this richness that you got with .NET applications, you can now get with Java applications as well. And so here, I'm sorry, not here. Here is the same dashboard or a similar kind of a dashboard, but it is showing you in the context of a back-end application that is run using Java Beans. Right? And so I can go click on this, and just like I got with the .NET application, I'm going to get the similar kinds of details, but for Java-based applications. Okay? This is the kind of richness that we want to provide to our customers, regardless of whether you're using .NET or whether you're using Java. Right? All right. So in summary, what we have done as a part of 2012 R2 is enhance all the capabilities that you get in the ability for you to deploy infrastructure and operate it in the most optimal manner. Make sure that you have a comprehensive governance, regulation, and control platform which allows you to provide IT service management, provide you rich and flexible choices for you to be able to create self-service portals, and for application owners, provide you deep application insight for all applications that you deploy, regardless of whether they are Java or whether they are .NET-based applications. Right? So hopefully with this talk, I've been able to give you a very high-level overview of the capabilities that we are shipping as a part of System Center 2012 R2. The team is incredibly eager to get your feedback. Now that the bits are available, I would encourage you to actually download those bits, deploy them, and give us the feedback so we can make sure that before we actually release this product, it generally meets the needs of you as customers. All right? Just want to point out that I've added a couple of sessions that you might want to attend which talk about more details into all the capabilities that I provided to you at a very high level. And I think I've got about 10 minutes, so I'd like to take questions at this point of time. Yes? I'm sorry? So the question was, for monitoring Java application, do I still need to deploy BeanSpy? That is correct. You still need to deploy BeanSpy. Absolutely. We are standing by it, and therefore we absolutely would not put something which would jeopardize our customers' data. And we'd be happy to have more conversations. If you could drop by the booth, we'd be happy to have more conversations there as well. Any other questions? Yes. So the question is, will Hyper-V replica management be built into VMM? Yes, if you remember, I talked about Windows Azure Hyper-V Recovery Manager. That actually plugs into VMM, absolutely plugs into VMM. In fact, now that I do have the time, let me show you that demo. Yes, you can manage from inside VMM, but you do require it to be tied to the Windows Azure Hyper-V Recovery Manager. No, the question is, can you manage it standalone without the Windows Azure Hyper-V Recovery Manager? The answer is no. It requires Windows Azure Hyper-V Recovery Manager. So the question is, you know, just like you manage Hyper-V replica from Hyper-V Manager, do you have the same capability available in VMM? The answer is no. You do require Windows Azure Hyper-V Recovery Manager to be tied into your VMM server, and that gives you orchestration and management capabilities. Yes. Let me see if there's anybody else. Yep. Yes. I'm sorry? Are you talking about the Windows Hyper-V Network Virtualization Gateway? And sorry, what is the question? I'm sorry. Oh, so the question is, in SCOM dashboard, will you be able to see the gateway? Not right now, but we are looking into it. Yep. Yes, anybody else? Yes. So the question is, does Windows Azure Pack mean that it cannot be used in an offline environment? Absolutely not. Windows Azure Pack is software that you will deploy inside your data center. It does not require connectivity to Windows Azure. It just provides you capabilities that are consistent with Windows Azure. I'm sorry? Absolutely. It does not require connectivity to Windows Azure. You're absolutely right. Yes. So the question is, are there any enhancement for Service Manager? For the most part, in the context of Service Manager, we're making sure that it is shipping as a part of this release, supported to run on 2012 R2, and there are a couple of critical bug fixes that we put into this. But you've got to remember that with the R2 release, we just had about 3 months of development cycle before we could actually get this release out of the door. So most of the investments are at the layer which actually took the biggest change, which is Windows Server. So as you go higher up the stack and System Center, not much change has happened in that context. Yes. Yep, go ahead. For Service Manager? So the question is, will we support SharePoint 2013 for the Service Manager portal? At this point, no. Because we actually did a survey with the MVPs, and the feedback we got was that, you know, it's not that critical right now. Yes. What is the difference between Windows Azure Pack and App Controller? System Center App Controller is a Silverlight-based portal which was released in System Center 2012 for the first time, and it was primarily designed as a portal which allowed you to span hybrid clouds. It could sit on top of Service Provider Foundation, on-premise, and Windows Azure. The Windows Azure Pack is not multi-targeted. It is only talking to your one cloud. But like I said, over time, it is reasonable to expect that we are going to invest more and more behind a single portal strategy. And I think it won't be too far to expect that the HTML5-based portal is where we'll put all our investments in. But if you're invested in System Center templates or using VMM RBAC, App Controller is the right portal to use. Yes. The question is, do I still need an agent for every System Center component? Yes. I hear you. The feedback is well taken. We'll definitely work over time to consolidate the agents. Definitely. Yes. So the question is there any integration between SPF and DPM? Not at this point. The only integration the SPF has is with VMM right now. Yes. Any, So the question is there any replacement for usage data in SPF? That is the new capabilities that I showed you this time. It's called usage analytics, but that requires the full stack of Windows Azure Pack, System Center, and Windows Server to be installed. So the question is, cannot just use the API? Not right now. No. Yes. So the question is, can I fail back after failover? Yes, you can. Absolutely. And you can do a test failover, and you can do a planned and unplanned failover as well from the portal. Yes. So the question is, can PowerShell runbooks that we showed, can they be triggered from inside Service Manager? At this point, no. They're actually triggered from inside the web-based portal that I showed you. But over time, we are looking at ways to actually act as triggers which could trigger those runbooks. So the question is, will there be coexistence between the orchestrator and orchestrator runbooks and these new runbooks? They coexist even today, right? They absolutely coexist. But they are targeted to actually solve slightly different problems. So Orchestrator, was really designed when we didn't have a consistent automation underlying engine. And so we had to do all kinds of things to build the integration packs. But over time, now that we actually have a more consistent way to actually build automation, this provides us more robust capabilities over time. But Orchestrator will absolutely exist and is the right thing to use if you're using anything that does not have PowerShell automation right now. Yes. Anybody else? Yes. Any performance? So the question is, it's a comment. It says, SCOM is too slow. Is there any performance enhancements made in R2? Well, we've made some targeted investments in performance enhancements in various parts of the stack, not so much in SCOM, but I'd be happy to take more feedback in what you're looking at. Sorry? Yeah, could you talk to Chung and have a follow-on conversation as well? So the question is, can I restore just a file from Linux as opposed to the whole Linux? I don't believe so. I think ILR, it's called ILR, item level recovery is only available for Windows guests because you need to understand the file system, and we don't understand the EXT3 file system that's there in Linux. All right, folks, I'm out of time. Thank you so much. Really appreciate the opportunity to talk to you, and thank you for staying on. Thank you.